Right, this is going to be another episode of Counterpoints. I am back with Maniac. That's not intended to rhyme. It's just a coincidence. If people don't know, I'll just say this now, because actually, even though this is Last Three Nation, not technically Thorin's channel, I own Last Three Nation. So it's also Thorin's channel. It's just I memed on all you guys. You were like, haha, I'll support this company, but you, Thorin, say, I own the company. So if you don't know, I've actually just launched a Substack, and I'm doing all banger content on there. I'm going to do loads of written articles, you'll just see. So if you thought I was already a loudmouth with all videos, just get ready till I'd write every morning too. And by the way, this is the level of gangster I'm on, guys. I am the sort of guy that can release part one of a reflection interview with Alexi B, just won the major, the same day I release a column, why Navi winning that major was a fluke. That's just who I am. You have to understand, there's a level you got to get to do that voice. Because I can tell you, if you know pro players, mate, like, Alexi B's pretty chill, but there's some pros that like would hate you forever if you said that. They just would, you know. I mean, I can tell you, there's a reason, Maniac, it took a few years before Stewie 2K warmed up to me, because guess what? He didn't really appreciate me telling him the Boston Major was a fluke and he shouldn't have left SK Gaming if it was real and all that. He wasn't a fan of that, believe it or not, Maniac. I know that'll probably blow your mind. You know, some people don't appreciate that sort of critique.
Not everybody's open to these kinds of statements with this way. Players mostly. Sure. Always big fans. They need a bit of time. They need a buffer to come back on and talk with you then, I guess.
By the way, I will actually also give I like to give people their flowers every now and then. I'll give Pimpers flowers in that sense. Even though one of the things I have criticised Pimp for a lot being an analyst was that I always thought he kept like the fire takes in the green room and then magically on the desk it just transformed into like a really reasonable take. And I was like, what the? Dude, you had like the take right there. I'll give him credit. He essentially did imply what I've just said more firmly about it being a fluke right after they won on that desk with you. Like, he actually did sort of say, guys, that like they're still not top five for him, and he sort of implied it was a fluke, which, by the way, that takes balls to do, by the way, guys, on the less segment of a major. Like, even though here's a cool detail I'll tell you, Maniac, before we get into the show, which is what people won't know is, I won't say who, but I could message you after this and tell you, there's a really famous Counter-Strike figure that's in Valorant, right? And I can tell you, as soon as that final ended, he DM'd me. I'm not even at the event, mate, but just to talk about CS stuff. And just said, like, dude, I miss CS. Because that desk, I've just realized now, like, they actually said on that desk, the winner of the World Championship might be a fluke. And then criticized, like, fucking Immer for still not being good in the match he just won. And he basically said, like, you couldn't even, like, conceive of that in Valorant. Like, never mind say it. You wouldn't, you like, know the guardrails are there, so you wouldn't even think that thought and then attempt to say it. So, like, it's like he'd forgotten what it was like, how real it is in CS. Because one good thing, as much as people complain about Valve is, I hate, some of the things they do in the game, but I do appreciate that they just keep their hands off stuff like that. Like, if you don't know, guys, never ever in the history of Counter-Strike ever has anyone from Valve ever reached out and said, like, Thorin shouldn't have said that, or, like, what, you know, what's going on? As far as I know, they don't even interfere with that. So actually, fair play to them. Fair play.
Oh my God. It would actually be so obnoxious to feel like I cannot say what I want to say on a desk on account of fear of being fired or having whatever TOs coming in. It's not something I would like to think of. So, yeah, well, maybe he shouldn't watch Counter-Strike content anymore. He's going to miss it too much.
True.
He's going to miss it too much. Go back to his desk thinking, oh my God, I cannot speak my mind. I can tell the truth. So, but yeah, that's how we do it in Counter-Strike. We're trying to keep it real all the time, always, everywhere.
Then let's do that, because the fun thing is, normally people know, I'm actually, first of all, in general in Counter-Strike, the reason why I love open circuits, Maniac, and tournaments, is because actually I find group stage games, and by the way, a league format is by definition a giant group. I find groups the least interesting, mate. I actually understand why in sports like football, it's kind of good, because you do just prove who is the best over like 40 games or something. But I have to say, for excitement, actually they're not that interesting. Because for example, I mean, this happens at Pro League every time, mate. Because for everyone who's like the FaZe and the G2 of the world, Pro League is like one of the least important big events, at least the group stage part, guys. Maybe when they're in the playoffs to start to warm up a bit. That's why you always do have way better chance of upsets too. You're going to have these teams where actually, like for people like Mongols, remember, the joke is the group stage of Pro League and then getting like through the play-ins at like a Cat or a Clone is their major. Like that's where they start cooking. That's where they start trying to go to work and get the upsets. So normally I don't go too deep on them, but the cool thing is because of the triple bracket format, by the way, I quite like this format actually. I think it's way better than the old round robin groups. I told people to get rid of those years ago. This like triple elimination thing into qualifying into a bracket. Look, I still don't like the fact it's not in a giant arena and all that jazz, but I do like this format. And so I actually think, because I've seen series play, I actually have a pretty decent sense of some of these teams. So let's talk about some of these teams right now. So I'll tell you one that I have to say at the major, I did think they were mad overhyped, mate. But There is something to watching them play after watching them play, and it is sore, right? Because you know this. The main driving factor, Maniac, wasn't anyone saying, but look at incredible tactics. And then this player here might be a top 20. No, no. It was that everyone knew they'd had their heart broken at that past major qualifying and didn't make it off that like fucking diffuse or whatever. And then they made it in super close fashion this time. And so it was more of like a feel-good story. It was almost like the sort of story they do on American news, you know, like, oh, they found this kitten in a tree, but they returned it to the owner. But what I have to say is, I mean, we've just seen them beat Eternal Fire. Like, the thing I'd say about Saw at the outset is this, mate. You can't go crazy about them, because if you watch them, they obviously don't have the star players that you need. And in fact, I'm pretty sure on some other teams, when we talk later, I actually think one of the biggest changes from CSGO to CS2 is, dude, you need a lot more fragging in this game. Like, this isn't the tactical grind-out game that we used to have. Like, there's a reason why Monacy can't win you every game. Like, you need a bunch of people fragging. So the problem they have is they don't really have, like, the big superstars. But if you ignore that part and you look at the flaw of the team, they do have something. Like, it's clearly a construction team. Like, they've got something going on. They're clearly putting in the hours, or they've got like some sort of synergy. What are your thoughts on this team? Because I don't think they're going to make like big playoff runs, mate, but they can get these upsets. So I think they can have these games where they catch you, you know?
Yeah, I'm really glad that they're finding a little bit of success here at Pro League, because I was going a little bit against the masses at the major, whereas I knew that there was a big hype factor around Saw.
Sure.
And I thought this was overrated. Not that they're a bad team, but I do think if you actually take the time to fine comb the teams they've beaten and how they got to that hype, I feel like they hadn't really beaten anyone of an extremely high caliber, and then I was sort of waiting for the downfall to happen. I didn't wish it for it to happen, because I think, as you said, the romance of the story of how they missed out on it, and you know, different players could have made it to the major. It was in Antwerp, I think, or was it Paris or Antwerp? The defuse, that was Antwerp, I think.
I think so.
The defuse against Jame, yeah. So I was happy for them to make it. I was happy for Mutirius and Roman. These are guys that used to play against me.
Oh, it's a bit around old school, yeah.
I played against them when they were in Kick, and then all over whatever lineups they had here in the Portuguese scene. So I was glad for them. But I thought that they were overrated when they rolled up in Copenhagen. So the cold shower, it was something that I expected. I was wondering how they would react. I was wondering if they would just dissolve and disappear. I think that the latest two additions, Ujerix and Arosdose, might not be superstar quality, but they have elevated the team. They have drastically elevated the team. I think they both sort of take turns in having carry-like performances. In Pro League, it's Arosdose currently has 1.20 plus rating.
No, he's good, yeah.
And yeah, they really have something, and they have established this sort of healthy balance between Roman and Mutiris, who are very, very experienced. Maybe not in S-tier level of Counter-Strike, not in playoffs, but when it comes to being a professional and, you know, playing the leagues and the lands and all of that, and then you have this sort of infusion of young blood. So I like that. I think when it comes to the pure Counter-Strike, it's a little bit map dependent. A map like Nuke, for example, is where I really like what they're doing. And you can see that they have a healthy balance of individual plays, but also they have the set strategies. They can hit you with some of the really nice executes. So that's nice. I don't think what they have done in Pro League so far is incredible. I you know, losing to 3D Max, That's not
that's
the best.
Questionable already.
It's questionable. That the Imperial one,
that's not bad.
That's the Nuke one is very impressive. On Inferno, I couldn't catch the last map. I see they won in overtime, so it must have been something about, you know, holding your nerves. But then the Eternal Fire one is the one that really stands out. And I wasn't on the desk or casting or couch or whatever. That was the later shift. But as I was watching the game, I had such a strange feeling that Eternal Fire just weren't in it.
Yes.
Like, they were not in
it. Don't worry, they'll be the next team. We're going to get into that.
No, I know. And we'll get into this as well. So it kind of
clouded but you factor some of that. It's not that Saw, like, beat them at the top. But pretty sweet. Here's the obvious way to say it, Maniac. If you watched Eternal Fire against FaZe, Eternal Fire flares were cooking. They were fragging out. Like,
I know.
If those players turn up like that against Saw, they probably do beat them. Let's be real, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about it later. But I think that's what Eternal Fire have to learn how to do right now is take the lesser prestigious matchup with the same kind of gusto and the same kind of will and bravery, which they didn't against Saw. And I think Saw an opportunity, and they struck. That was incredible. The Nuke game was super comprehensive. I was just at 1.7 rating over the whole series. What is there to say? When Major is your top fragger for Eternal Fire, you know something was profoundly wrong.
Yes.
Now, going up against VP, for the fourth place decider, a.k.a. whether you make it in playoffs or not,
it's brutal.
Think that's going to be a really cool test. So, that is great, because it's not like VP have been perfect.
Far from it.
So, I think this would be a super good litmus test to see where Saw is at right now. That they have sort of stabilized between, hey, we're riding the high of I think after the RMR, they had like 8 or 9 series won in a row. Obviously, not at STR event, but they were going from wins to wins to wins to wins. Then they crashed at the major, heartbroken, and now they're kind of stabilizing, finding a couple of wins here and there. So it's a very good moment to see what they're made of. I will have VP personally winning that game.
Of course, but sure.
You know what? Please, go ahead. Surprise me. I wouldn't mind. So I think they're a team that's easy to like and they're a team that's easy to cheer for.
And I'll always say this. It's why I framed it that way, Maniac. Essentially, I can't hype them because the ceiling of the team can't be that crazy. Like, even the player they brought in, like you're talking about, he's not Monacy. And, spoiler, their actual AWPer isn't that good. And I always point this out, guys. Be scared any time you see a team trying to play Tier 1 that doesn't have an Elite AWPer, because that player will get fucking murked by all the Elite AWPers. If you watch Maniac, that fucking analytical lens that I brought in a few years back has applied. Because, famously, I brought it in, actually, for people like... I think it was people like maybe early Torji and people like Lockie in Astralis, etc., and Farley, because it was just obvious these people would get destroyed at their role. And the reason why that does work is think of the teams that didn't have quite a good enough AWPer. OC and Team Liquid. You could get far. You could get to a semis or a final. You weren't going to win. All you were going to lose to a Z-Wave, or you're going to get smashed by Simple or something. Then you go down the line, fucking... It's actually even the reason why I knew when Heroic became insane. Because I always said, look, Cadian's not going to beat Simple straight up. So he's going to have to do something more than that. It can't just be the AWPer fragging. So, yeah, I think already there's a problem you're going to have, which is the two players you talked about are both riflers. So, look, you could do work with that in CS2, certainly, but the AWP has to contribute at some point. No, the reason why I framed it that way is the ceiling isn't that crazy, but the floor's pretty good. Like that, the key thing is, like you're saying, the reason why the floor being good is awesome is because then if an Eternal Fire or VP doesn't come to play and thinks, it's a lesser team, we're going to walk through. No, that's not the way that works, mate. Like, I'll give you the example you'll like as someone who appreciates tennis. Dude, this is like when someone goes to Roland Garros to play the French Open and there's some like top-ranked player, but maybe they're not like a clay court specialist, right? And I'll tell you what, you know how many times those guys see the bracket and they see their seeding and they're like, yeah, I'm like 13th. Like, you know, those people like Gulbis who are like fucking mega fucking like servers and medical talent. And what they think is they look at the bracket and they see a guy who's like, you know, he's like 98th in the world. And they're like, ah, I'm getting past him easy. And it's like, no, what you had to look into, mate, which you didn't explore, is he's like a fucking clay court grinder. Like, all he does, like David Ferrer, he just passed the ball back all day long. He's not even going to hit an amazing winner. He's just going to pass the ball back all day long. And if you're not prepared for that, he'll win. Now, look, he won't then go win Roland Garros. He'll lose in the next round to the next guy, but we need those people, guys. That's why when G2 first started winning with Hooksy and me and Richard were saying the scene's weak, that's why, because dude, the top teams were weak and then the teams below were trash at the time. Actually, this major to me showed that we actually have like a decent, we have like a sub, like whatever you call it, tier 1.5 to tier 2 is actually pretty strong right now, right?
Yeah, and I think it's very important to keep a circuit healthy, to have people who are ready to punish when top teams are just letting and go off the gas pedal. Like, it has to be like that. And it also means that tournaments like Pro League or the IMs that aren't the Cologne and the Katowice ones that are a bit more secondary, not the championship tournament, that these are moments where teams can strike. And just as a whole, if we take out the focus and zoom out, Pro League is exactly that. Like, Pro League, a Pro League that happens post-major is an incredible ban and appeal for any top team that's off the major, that might be a little bit tired, that doesn't exactly have a lot left in the tank. And of course, they're professional. They're going to show up here and they're going to try to get a notch in the Intel Grand Slam. They're going to try to get the win. I understand that. But in the actual detail, they're going to be far away from 100%. There are a few teams who, with a roster change, sort of manufacture a reason to be full speed. I think Astralis is a great example. Like, they're not tired at all. Astralis is not tired at all. They're here to destroy everyone, to make a statement. But some other teams who have had deep runs at the major and cannot find a way to create a narrative about how Pro League is important, they will fall victim to like teams who want it, teams who are going to take that opportunity. Teams like Saw, teams like 3D Max, teams like Mongols. Like, these are all teams that are hungry as hell. And if you think you can give your 80% and still win, you're going to get smacked. And this is why I think the obviously FaZe making all these finals has a very side and dramatic side to it, because it could actually be 8 trophies and sure, that would be mind-blowing, and it's not. But at the same time, the fact that they were always able to make it exclusively to the grand final every single event they go to, it is mind-bending for me. Like, their floor is so high. So FaZe can do it. Some other teams, maybe not. And they will pay the price when you have the little kids coming around the block and ready to frag everybody, just the way Saw did it, the way Mongols is doing it right now. That's why the tournament is exciting. That's how I make it exciting for me. That's how I come here and I get invested and I engage in the tournament, because I try and see it through the lenses of the smaller teams who have an opportunity here to strike and can make the big teams scramble a little bit.
Let's do it then. Let's actually talk about Eternal Fire, because this is a team that we need to discuss. Like, they did just make the playoffs of the major, and before that playoff match, they were fragging out. Like, everyone was going crazy. Like, at the time, if people don't know, like, Xantaras had, like, MVP level numbers in the tournament. Like, Wicadius, like, a revelation. I mean, he actually wasn't doing that great at that tournament, but he obviously over the tournament, he's one of the reasons they become relevant again. I think this performance, not only did I think actually they didn't give Na'Vi as good a game as they could have, this performance was underwhelming here at Pro League.
Yeah.
Like, look, I'll give them credit. They did almost get FaZe. They had that game on the table. That was there, but it's like you said earlier, mate, that almost stinks of, like, you don't actually really believe you're a top team. If you're a top team, you have to figure out how to play against lesser teams. You don't just get up for the big game where someone's better than you. That's what underdogs do. That's what the team who, like, yeah. The joke there is, yeah, that's your final to play FaZe. Like, for FaZe, that's just Tuesday, or, you know, the old joke from, like, M. Bison and Street Fighter or whatever. Like, that's no big deal to them. So, actually, them beating you like that when you're popping off is a really bad sign for you, because what I would say at the outset is this. The one of the reasons why, and don't worry, I'm going to do a video about this soon. One of the reasons I'm a bit critical of Major, is I do think a lot of that is, like, emotion and fucking romance of the story, and the fact he's still around all these years later, and within, like, their scene, at least he's legendary and all that jazz. The reason why I have a hard time believing he's some sort of tactical mastermind is because when I watch this teammate, the main thing, and sometimes the only thing they have, is raw fragging. Like, one thing I give them mad props for is I see why all these years they struggled to get the super team together. Like, the joke, because even though Woxic was playing well in some of those games, he actually usually isn't even that sick. It usually is the Xantaras and Wicadia, sure. But that's my problem, mate. First of all, they are so carried by Xantaras, it's bonkers. Like, this guy, for real, when they look good, Maniac, has to be like a 1.3 rating type player. Like, he actually has to be, like, in theory, the best rifler in the game, guys. Which, look, he actually always had insane mechanics, so he can do that sometimes. But he also is a player where, I mean, he hasn't been in that many playoff scenarios himself. Like, he hasn't been known to drop off. He dropped off in that match against Na'Vi at the major. And then Wicadia, he's just really young. So, like, look, he clearly has talent, by the way. He's going to be a player for the future. Like, maybe he is going to be the next, like, Woxic or Xantaras, but he's just too young. So my problem is, if your main thing you have is fragging, and right now, by the way, I think if you even watch them, this is a team where, like, if you go watch them play against Astralis, for example, they're just outclassed in that game. Like, Astralis has way better T-side, talk about that later, maybe. And then on CT side, when you're against Astralis, you're just going to get battered. Like, you're going to have a hard time there. So to me, you're relying too much on fragging, and then that also can't just win you the game, because I also think they have the type of fragging that's a bit cynical, mate. Like, it really is like, if Wicadia and Xantaras get opening kills, you win the round. If they don't, you're left in some really dodgy, yeah, like 2-on-2s and 3-on-3s. Give me your thoughts on them. Come on.
Okay, so let's start with the Major conversation, because I know him personally pretty well, and I think I have a pretty decent opinion of, like, how he looks at Counter-Strike. I think that he has a really good mind for the game, and I think he probably overcompensate for what's lacking in team play in his teammates. And that's something that I'm seeing when I'm watching him play. And obviously I don't speak Turkish, but I can make a judgment on who is talking when, okay, and how is it flowing. I really think that sometimes Major has to do too much.
Oh, you think he has to, like, fill in the comms or something if someone's just, yes, looking at the crosshair, exactly. Right, so right.
If I could completely be wrong.
No,
this is
an
opinion,
yeah,
that I have from an external standpoint when I watch them play and I, okay, listen to what's happening. I have a feeling sometimes he is probably communicating for other people in order for moves to happen on the map. And I'm not exactly sure if it's whether people don't have the game sense for it or they don't have the initiative for it. But I sometimes feel like if the people are not fragging, and that's what you're talking about, it's the overly reliance on mat fraggers and, like, multi-kills and all, I feel like sometimes the fabric of their game, mostly on the CT side, is just too individualistic. Like, there's not enough moves happening, there's not enough movement, and I flash for you, we retake that area, we're moving around together. It's either Major is coordinating everything or nothing's happening. And that's a big problem, because that means two things. First one, that means that, again, if the frags don't happen, you're going to have moments where you're being caught off guard and, like, you're just not in the right position because you haven't reclaimed information, you haven't made the right sort of assumption about what's happening in the round. And the other problem is that he's going to have games where he disappears because it's just too much. Like, it is unhealthy for one player, one captain, to have to do the talk for everybody all the time. That's something that sometimes Apex has to deal with as well, by the way, in Vitality, like talking too much, trying to organize plays all around the map. Players have to have a healthy level of responsibility in that, and I don't think that's the case in Eternal Fire. I think Major does too much about it. So he needs his teammates to become more sort of self-reliable and have more initiative and have be more spontaneous, more team play. I think that's going to be step one. Now, when it comes to individual performances, the harsh truth is Andy Ruiz Antares is constant.
Yes.
That's really what's happening. Like he, not that he cannot have a bad game, that can happen, but over time, he is the one metric that will never fail. He's the one that will always give you kill. He's always going to have a crazy output. I talked with...
And the eye test just checks out on that guy like a motherfucker. No, you will just see him doing three kills instantly.
You know, mechanically, you know how good he is. There's no doubt about it. And also, I know from the fact that he's quite involved in like the game plans and like talking with Jir as well. So he's way more than apparently just like a robot who kills everybody. He really has an idea about the game. But I talked with Wikadia in Copenhagen because I was trying to figure out the eye test for me is currently that this guy is only really comfortable when he gets to run and he gets to open and he gets to take space. I feel like this is when you get the best out of him. You see, I have so many clips in my mind where he's A ramp on vertigo and just wide swinging side and finding kills, same in B stairs. And I was talking to him and I said, is it in my head or do you just struggle on the CT side currently? And he told me, I haven't found my groove on the CT side. And that's a real big problem because he's obviously like super mechanically gifted. Like you can see how quick, like his time to kill, his headshot percentage is really high. He's very impressive at that, but he doesn't have this solidity of a player who can play off angles and just do a -2 in a strong position. Sometimes he get caught and it just doesn't work. Like as if whenever he's standing still, his skill drops like 30%. Obviously I know it's not as easy as that. I'm simplifying here, but like he hasn't really found a way to use his assets and his strength on the CT side. That is, for me, it's really limiting because he sometimes become like a liability. You play on Nuke, you play Eternal Fire on Nuke, you can just go inside. Like he's not comfortable. He doesn't feel great on that A side. It's very rare that I see him just clean up crew. So that, for me, that's one problem. And then that is something that I imagine could be either fixed or improved over time because, as you said, he is green, he is young. I believe he's got a great career ahead of him.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to hit the panic button quite yet. But I feel like for Woxic, it's different. Woxic is inconsistent.
Yep.
He has extremely high highs. And we all have maps in mind. By the way, Dust2 is coming back in the pool. And we all know how a Woxic on Dust2 can look like. So the high highs are like engraved in our memory because there are moments where he just catches on fire and it's over. But there's also games where his impact is like almost non-existent.
Yes.
So how are you supposed to build a game plan? And now I'm putting myself in Major's shoes again. How am I supposed to build a game plan if I am unsure about what's going to be the output of my sniper? Like, how am I building a setup? And how am I building moves if one game he's going to give me 3 kills in that position and the other one is going to give me 0?
Yes.
Like, I think it's really hard. The CT side is where I feel like they really struggle to have any kind of certainties about how they want to approach rounds. And I believe a lot of it is down to individual inconsistency. So that was for like more like micro analysis. In the grand scheme of things, I think you're right. It's a bit of a make or break moment for them. Like, are they going to become a team that is reliably top 8? Are they going to be like a playoff team that we always have to contend with, that we always have to talk about and we always have to appreciate? Or are they just capable of giving 200% when they're about to do something incredible? And when not, then they're going to become a middling team who is vulnerable to losing to lesser teams that they are not supposed to lose to, as in Seoul, for example. I was hoping the playoffs at the Major would be the moment that changes that. And apparently hasn't been the case yet.
Yeah, okay, I'll do it in reverse order. So in terms of like the ranking thing, that's even a good way to frame it. Obviously, like they were like, I think, number 7 team or something when that match against FaZe took place, right? I agree with you. The premise goes, because of making top 8 at the Major and having some big results, if you only watch the big matches, people are going to want to believe, right? This is like a super good, like, it's essentially like the ultimate like upset team. They could maybe win like first round of a playoff game or something. And so you have to worry about them if you're a top team. So the question is, are they like the 7th or 8th team? The problem I worry about is I think if you do the aggregate, it feels more they're going to be like the 11th best team, if you know what I mean. And that does mean you'll miss some playoffs or you'll just get bounced in the first round. Then on the Woxic thing, I definitely agree there because this is where I know who's watched Woxic when he wasn't in this team. Because, bro, the Woxic that used to be in Hellraisers way back was a stud. That's when, as far as I know, he was quite motivated to play. And if people don't know, those teams were a nightmare, whether it was like him and Issa and a bunch of players who were like all speaking second language English with like fucking Angel or whoever like coordinating them. What a weird team that is, right? But he used to be a stud. And then when he had Carrigan, And let's be real, almost everyone's better with Carrigan, by the way, guys. He was really fucking good that 2019. He's actually one of the players, sadly, where I do think the online era sort of like... it somewhat crippled his career because he's clearly a guy who never gave a fuck about an online game. The irony is this, guys. Zantares is the ultimate onliner. Woksic doesn't look like he even fucking engages his brain when it's online. He's like the sort of guy where like LAN is his cup of coffee in the morning. Like, don't talk to me till I've had my cup of coffee. It's that meme, right? But the problem now is this is too many years later. And so now when he's coming this team, well, remember, that was the hype all those years, Maniac. It's like, what if Woksic and Zantares and could all be in the same team? And by the way, we haven't even mentioned it, but shout out Calix for somehow actually being sort of like a supportive element, but then he can sometimes frag out because he does still have those skills. Even that's even the part of the team I find canny, I quite enjoy. But yeah, Woksic right now, the problem is he's not the player he was in Mouse like that, guys. Like, he just hasn't had anywhere close to that impact. He's not bad, but I'll tell you what, even some of his fragging's deceptive, because if you ever go and look, it's just all cleaned up all the lower teams, mate. Because again, he's the AWPer. Like, it's a really hard role to overperform in, guys. It's probably the most like binary role in the game. And then on the Magic one, I've got a little bit of rant here, so I've got a few places I'm going to go, but you'll be able to follow me. You'll see where I'm going on this. So the problem I have goes like this, right? Already, I don't think they have like amazing tactical aspect. Now, to be fair, maybe their style isn't even that. Maybe people like what the Zantares and the Woksic. I'm pretty sure they do want some freedom to do their own thing. But one of the problems I also have with Magic is this. It's actually his individual game, mate, because this is where I know who only watched the Major. At the Major, that was like one of the craziest overperformances he's had individually for ages. You might remember, he was like carrying the fucking Swiss system. He was going crazy. Yeah, was, and there's no way he's going to do that because he's mega old, guys, and he's the IGL, right? Not only was that like fool's gold, you're not going to get that again. But more importantly, there's actually one aspect to his game that I found very disappointing. And what's funny is I could just mega dunk on him. I will do that in my video, but I'll put a tiny bit of like balance to it here. Go like this, right? I'll preamble it by saying most IGLs sometimes have this issue because everyone who's an IGL on some level has to at least think they're smart or have a cerebral approach to the game and think about the bigger picture. One of the problems he actually has for real, Minik, I've seen this a lot of times now, people can go back and check, is, mate, he is actually so fucking much of a liability in late round scenarios. It's mental. Like, if he's in a 1v1 or a 2v2, bro, the amount of times I've seen him actually, like, not even see the timer and, like, the clock runs out and you don't plant the bomb or you don't come in time to have a chance to defuse or you take, like, a weird move. And here's the reason why I said I'm going to shade in that, like, in theory, it might be because he's smart. Because, believe it or not, this actually reminds me of some IGLs where they would be bad in clutches because they overthought the clutch. Mm. Like, you know, one of the great things about a clutch is there's some people can win clutches. Like, I'll give an example because he's really good right now. Like, I make the joke that the reason I can say JL's really good in clutches is, my joke is, it's like his brain isn't turned on, so he just fucking shoots people. He's just like, yeah, oh, I'll go left and shoot. I got him. He's never overthinking it because my joke is not thinking. You get the joke, right? But in a way, that is a good quality to have. Whereas the problem I think for someone like Magic when I've seen this is, it's like you yourself when you're in the 1vx don't believe you're going to win it. And so you're already triple, quadruple thinking, mm-hmm. should I back off? Should I go in? But if I go in, then he just kill me easy when I come to go to the defuse. If I tap, then he's going to know. Right? The reason why that sucks, for real, I'll give you the example of my favorite IGL, Carrigan. It's because, bro, that's why I actually love watching Carrigan's game in the phase era when he came back. Because it's not that, like, look, everyone knows on the T side, he just gets fragged immediately. Like, his job is just space create. And that's why we all go crazy if he ever has T side kills and he's like getting some 2Ks or whatever. We're all like, holy shit, how are they going to beat FaZe now? But the thing I actually like about watching his game, not just the tactics, is Carrigan, since he came back to FaZe, really did learn the movie storyline I always wanted him to, which is, mate, you've already lost a billion of these games and a billion close games and choked. At this point, you may as well just make the big balls play. And if you lose, you're going to lose anyway. But if you win, you give yourself a chance, because there's a concept from poker people might not understand, which is the reason why in poker, the traditional meta back in the day, believe it or not, was you did the opposite. You played incredibly defensive. You just waited until you had the good hands. And then you tried to guess what the likelihood this guy has, like a hand comparable to mine. You sort of did a maths calculation in your brain, and then you're like, right, I raise or I fold based on that, right? And you sort of played like a computer. But what happened was the meta became the opposite. The meta became to be hyper aggressive, because people realized when you're aggressive, even if you don't have the better hand, it increases the chances the other guy folds. And basically, just aggression adds like an extra percentage chance to win the round. And I feel like in clutches, that's a real thing. Like, if you play way too safe in a clutch, I mean, the joke is, just watch that fucking Sun Pius where he lost that last round against fucking 22. He didn't even have a chance because he tried to check every fucking corner because he's had a rifle, not an AWP, and he never made the ballsy play or like gambled that he was somewhere. And in doing so, he actually lost the round without a chance to win it. Unless he was literally correct on like the first seven places the guy was, he never had. Imagine doing a bit of that for my money, because that's what I think changed in someone like a Carrigan. It's like they started playing aggressive like that, and you can still lose the round, but that's how you give yourself a chance. And in fact, I even think the reason I give the Carrigan example is a good one is because he also is not a very skilled player right now. So another thing is, if you're not that skilled, well, here's the great thing about clutches. They do somewhat even out the skill. There aren't that many players do their insane headshot on the clutch. Everyone gets a little bit nervous. So if everyone's a bit nervous and you just make a decisive play and gamble early on, if you're the IGL, you give yourself a chance to win it. So I feel like in that sense, he also, because I'll share this social aspect in as well. You probably saw that when they lost earlier in the tournament, he did himself like a massive tweet in Turkish. I had no fucking paragraphs, but a lot of pros are like that. He did like a massive apology to his fans, because what I'm guessing, Maniac, is he probably has the same problem the Brazilians told me they had back in the day, where when I told them, like, sorry, I hated on you, but, you know, like, all your fans were attacking me, and they were like, bro, they attack us when we lose. Like, I think that thing's happening to him. I think the Turkish fans do expect them to be, like, the fifth best team in the world. And so if they lose, they have to... I think the pressure's getting to him a little bit. So I think, they have to resolve that aspect as well. Because in that scenario, you're supposed to be the most experienced player. Like, do, like, the Carrigan move. Just give yourself a chance. I feel like sometimes people think themselves out of Counter-Strike games, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And knowing him, he might definitely be a victim of overthinking and, like... I used to be like that as well sometimes when I would play, where I would be so aware of how there are many different ways I'm going to lose this round that it would, at the end, you would just constrain yourself, because you realize, you think about all of the, you know, the different X and Y's of the clutch situation. You're thinking, oh my God, the time is against me and there was a guy behind me. And that there's no way. You cannot always just deduct what you are supposed to do in a clutch. Sometimes you have to hedge your bet and decide that there's one scenario in which I win, and in that scenario, that guy is to the left, not to the right. And if he's to the right, I lose.
Yes.
So be it. Let's go. And I white swing the left angle. He's definitely a victim of that. Also, if you make the example of Carrigan, and I was talking about having autonomous teammates who can make their own decisions, he's also very well served in phase. I think he now probably has a bit more luxury to sometimes just plug it into his own game sense and just say, okay, I'm going to make this move now, because I don't have to hold the hands of the kids behind me. Like, if I'm crossing this smoke right now because that's the play I feel like is happening, my team is going to be fine. They know what to do. So, yeah, definitely. I think you're onto something with the clutching and the overthinking for Major.
Because here's the thing. I want to actually contrast, not Eternal Fire, because as I pointed out, they actually do have the fraggers. If anything, they need to just get some of that. And by the way, the other thing they also have to work out in Eternal Fire is this. You've got to work on that map pool, boys. You've got the two maps you're really good on. If it isn't fucking Virgo and Anubis, like, it starts to get, it, as we say in English, it gets hard sledding, mate. Like, that's like fucking, it's like going uphill on some of those other maps. So you have to realize, in the modern day, guys, you have to be able to be good on maps like Nuke. I mean, it's going out now, but Overpass would have been one back in the day. Like, you got to have something more on these maps too. So that's just the thing. But I want to contrast to what I said about Saw at the beginning with Mongols. Because you know what, Maniac? While I appreciate, like I said, I see there's more nuance to Saw's game. Like, they actually do have a flaw and they clearly... I tell you what, Mongols is the team you actually want to get hyped about, guys. Because this is now, what, 3 or 4 lands where they've done this? Like, not just win games. Dude, these are best of threes they win. And they're winning against teams. Remember, the past tournaments, it was like Furia they were beating, like Complexity. Like, they were beating some actual real top 10 teams. And they keep doing it. And one of the reasons why I can get hyped about this, Maniac, is this. Two things. One, as a whole team, I fucking love that they play decisively. These guys do like triple peaks and stuff. And then when they're in like that mid-round scenario, which, by the way, if you're not someone who's ever played or watched a tier 1 Counter-Strike, the mid-round of a professional LAN game is where all those online teams get picked apart. Because what they do is they do play safe and they play the angles. And by the way, people like Nico in G2 rely on you to just play stupid basic CS like that. And that's where, like, he's going to take like an extra peak and catch you off guard, or he's going to do like a crazy flash push. But in the reverse, someone who's a top pro, like people in G2, they're not expecting the underdog team to do a move like that to them. They're not expecting in the mid-round you do like a mad, like, 3-man push out of, like, you know, a CT on an inch and burst out of the middle somewhere. They're never expecting that. They think they can leave that one guy there like they would in every other pro game, and he just watches the angle. So, first of all, I love that. And then the thing they have that Saw doesn't have, Maniac, is this team has the fraggers. Because here's the thing, mate. If this was just against the Asian teams, I'd be like, well, it's like Ty Lue back in the day. Are these players even that good? They're doing this fragging against the top teams. Like, they actually are shooting people in the head, boys. Like, even though you look at the names and you think, well, this guy's not going to win a duel against it. Just wait and see. If it's a group stage, no pressure, they actually might. Like, I actually think this is a team where, one, it's fun to watch. Like, they've got a really fun style. But then, two, I mean, they're going to be in the playoffs now. If this team can get to the odd playoff, this is one of those ones that you look at the bracket and you look past them, but the team that's going to play them can't do that. Like, they're kind of spicy, mate. They've got a bit of spunk, as it were.
They really are spicy to watch. And it's been great to see them sort of improve event after event, because if we go back in time, 9 months? That's, was it Cologne when they show up? Obviously, with IHC, they had a couple of experiences, but they still made the roster change, which I think is a great roster change as well. The kids, they're also one of the youngest team we have at the top level, so you have to give them a runway. But what I do like about them, and it's something that you mentioned as well, is that they are not risk averse. Like, they are ready to take risks. There's no problem with that. And I think as a whole, when you're a team that's up and coming in the top level of Counter-Strike, it probably is easier to have a game that has a bit too much extravaganza and then dial it down than it is to be a team that's afraid of everything and learn to sort of let go of the shackles and be crazy. I have a feeling that's easier to calm down than it is to crazy up as a team. Right. And I think that's the path they're on. Really, sure. That's how I see it. I swear to God.
It is.
Like, if you see a team that is boring and always tries to play the numbers and have no pizzazz to it, like, that's not going to happen. Unless there's a roster change and someone comes in with a different philosophy, that's not going to happen. But when you see a team that has these, like, very decisive moments and these multi-cross smokes together and hitting the timing when the bomb plant is happening, like, all of these sort of split decisions that really speak of aggression, I think they are going to be able eventually to improve at knowing when to do it and when not to. And this is exactly where they're at right now. Like, that's the next challenge for Mongols. There's two things they need to improve for me in terms of pushing the seeding that they have, which I honestly think is already pretty high. I'm a big fan of Mongols in overall. But there's two things. One is becoming a little bit better at identifying, okay, when do we have to go crazy in this round, or when do we have the advantage and now it's time to play the numbers? Like, it's time to play the universal, you know, we're 5v3, we're 4v2, and if we take position XYZ, we're going to be fine. We play the off angles off of each other and then we close around. They have to be a little better at doing this. And the other thing is the downside, the only downside of playing the more in-your-face Counter-Strike is that not everyone is equipped to deal with losing the stupid rounds because of that. And that's a part of it. That's like a tax that you pay. Yes. It's like VAT. If you actually have this crazy playstyle of Counter-Strike, there are going to be rounds in a series in a best of three that you lose that you shouldn't have. Power play situations, favorable clutches.
Yes.
And then, sure, you attempt the big play and then you get a multi-kill because you're also offering your opponent the ability to multi-kill you. And then I've seen them sort of dig a hole once they've lost these rounds. And I think as a team, if this is the Counter-Strike you want to play, then you need to have very open conversations about, guys, it is going to happen. Like, we know how we want to play. We have to fully embrace it. And that also means once we have lost that stupid round that I feel like is inevitable, we are back at 100% after the freeze time of the next round.
Yes.
So if they can emotionally deal with the cost of playing extravagant Counter-Strike at times, and if they can get just a little bit better at decision-making and knowing when to calm down, the rest, I feel like the pieces are here. Like, the players are shooting really hard. Senzu's wonderful to watch play. Techno Advinced have always been good, as far as I'm concerned. Mzinho, barely 17, has already made, like, incredible plays at the Major. So you have so many different reasons to be excited for Mongols. And for now, I see no reason to think that they have hit, like, a hard stop. I think they can get better. It all depends on how they sort of debrief the events they go to and what kind of conclusions they draw from the losses. But yeah, I mean, I'm on the hype train. I think it's not like a high speed train, but it's like a locomotive. Like, it's, you know, yes. I'm on the slow hype train for the Mongols.
I'm with you on that as well. It is true. If you embrace that kind of style, you can't then, as a fan, watch them and love it when they do, like, a crazy play on CT side of a map that's normally CT side. You know, like, you stay in the fucking base. You can't watch them do that and win a round against a big team, but then watch them, like, lose a fucking against Pistols or a Force or some, or a numbers advantage and go, hey, guys, just play safe and use that. That's not what you're doing. You're committing to this style, guys, where you're gambling sometimes. In fact, the premise there is the reason you literally will lose against Pistols sometimes when you've just won the gun round round, it's because you don't yet know they have the pistols. Like, you do a push as if they had guns again, and then, oh, fuck, if I'd known there were 3250s, I wouldn't have peaked that corner, would I? But that's that, yeah, you say that's, I agree. That's just like, there's like, that's whatever, 15% chance that that happens on that round. In the same way as the guy who just turtles won't ever lose that round, but he won't win the mad one where he has to, yes, like, come from 3v4 and the teaser's setting up to take his sight. He'll just die, and then they'll save the fucking guns, won't they? So, all right, how about this? I think an obvious team to swap to. Oh, and the other thing as well, by the way, about them. The reason why that style is making them mad exciting is this. Like a lot of the teams that now that have the fragging, obviously CS2 is the most T-sided version of Counter-Strike that ever existed, guys. So you are seeing, like, obviously they get loads of work done on T-side. But that's actually why I think they have a chance. Because on CT side, they don't just sit back and play like old school fucking Astralis. Like, they actually make the players, which give you a chance if you're against more experienced players. I tell you the team we should talk about now, because they're one of the ones who lost to the Mongols. It is Falcons. Mm. Because I actually feel like there's like the discussion around this team is ass maniac. Like, it's just people just either hating on them because of the Saudi shit, which is like, what's that going to do with analysis in the game? Or it's people doing those weird emotional narratives that I don't really know why they have. Like, Magus should have stayed in Vitality. And my favorite one is the one where it's like, Snappy, I bet you wish you were in now. It's like, we've explained a million times. Like, Magus had already won in Vitality and Zonic was leaving. And then Snappy staying in Ents. Like, it turns out they could have matched his salary. But I've always said this. Here's the reason why Snappy shouldn't have stayed in Ents. Because if he leaves Ents, they're never going to be as good again. And if he stays, they might be as good. But if they get their other star players signed, he's not going to be as good. So that what that means is he was Ents, for fuck's sake. I've even heard he actually was the one who scouted some of those players, by the way, that he got into the team. I've even heard he's so cool when he left, he sort of told them, here's my next shortlist of people you could replace the players with. And he actually told them some of the fuck, including by the way, I think he said, get Glaive instead of me. So put all that emotional shit aside. Let's just watch them as a team. We've watched them play a bunch now. Right, obviously, the first thing you have to say at the outset is, this is the first LAN with Dupree, guys. Like, I know people are doing that thing where they're like, but they're supposed to be a super team. Like, that narrative died the day Nico didn't sign on the dotted line. Like, they're not a super team. That's a ridiculous statement to have. What they are is the Ents core with, in theory, a slightly better player instead of Niha, but a worse player instead of Nerds. Because here's the thing. We're going to get into that part, the Dupree part, obviously. Like, I don't expect them to be a super team. I don't think people are being criminal where when they had Boros, they just delete that top four at Katowice. That just never happened, Maniac. Because they failed the RMR, we're supposed to pretend they never made top four at, like, one of the biggest events this year. By the way, with a worse player, in my opinion, in, like, the star position. So, to me, I actually find Falcons an interesting team because they've got a million problems, and you saw them all at Pro League. But there is something there. Like, for its way, as much as people are calling them this terrible team, mate, they're not... They're usually in all these games. Like, they could have beaten G2, but they definitely could have beaten Mongols. Like, they actually are a team that has something to them, but obviously they are missing pieces, or maybe the roster construction is a bit dodgy. Where are you at on this squad? I heard you were quite critical when you did the G2 cast, so where are you at on Falcons overall?
Well, the G2 game, honestly, aside from map one, was really empty from Falcons. I mean, it's a 13-3 and a 13-5 losses back-to-back, so it's not like they gave us a whole lot to be excited about. And I hadn't seen the Bedboom game, which I think on paper is also very problematic to lose 2-0 to Bedboom and never make it to double digit on any map. I think it's kind of a harder one to sort of justify if you're Falcons. So the problem that I have with Falcons is that because of this end score, like the whole super team narrative, I never really, like, I understood from the get-go when the roster didn't come together as they wanted to, I knew that this was outdated and that would never be coherent or relevant anymore. So that, for me, I don't care. I've never looked at them as a super team, and okay, that doesn't, it isn't part of my narrative when it comes to Falcon. But the way I look at it is that because of this end score, I had expected a floor to be higher from the get-go. When you have your AWP, when you have your leader, and when you have your support in the name of Madden and entry fragger, the shadow B-roll, you, in theory, already have enough to protect you from the woes of creating a whole team from scratch. Like, this, in my eyes, this is not Liquid. We're not looking at Liquid here. We're not looking at four or five different philosophies coming in together and then having to come up with a mixed bag of Counter-Strike. That's not how I look at it. Now, in interviews and all, they have made it quite clear that they wanted to find their own CS, and they are not going to just do Ents and all. That's fair. I personally think that what Snappy had done in Ents deserved to be reproduced to an extent. Like, I would have probably based a lot of the the game plan of Falcons from Ants, because I think he did great. It was an international team. He was thriving in it. I understand the concept of trying to not just sort of copy paste the play style of Counter-Strike, and you have to integrate some other ideas. I do get that, but I unfortunately think on short term that's cost them, and I think the floor is much lower than I expected. Now, obviously, let's just address the situation. I mean, Snappy individually had I don't even know if it was his worst performance.
It's got to be one of them. It was really bad.
It's probably down there. I was going to say up in here, but I guess figuratively it would be down there. And so I got a 0.77 rating individually in a day and age where leaders are notoriously having better numbers and are more efficient.
I mean, Carrigan again, just watch. He's like 1.0 rating sometimes, though. Yeah.
Kerrigan, Apex, the leaders that you could usually point to as being very low on the fragging output, they're all doing better. So that one, you don't need a degree to know that Snappy individually just completely missed the mark on that in this game. But that, to me, I use this as a sort of a vector to think about where the team is at. Because I always feel like when a leader is having a really hard time, not obviously part of it is on his own shoulder, and there is such thing as an individual responsibility and an autonomy and an agency as an individual to be better, and that's granted. But I always feel like systematically it means something else is happening, that a leader is just completely lost, whether it's because he's not intuitively in line with the Counter-Strike that they want to play, or if the communications aren't flowing the way he wants to. There has to be something that currently isn't going really well in the Falcons camp. I also think, well, obviously, every team that's losing isn't really smiling on the camera, but in their case, sometimes it is very, very quiet and somber in these losses, which I don't really know what that means. I'm not going to read too much into it, but it's not a feeling that is reassuring when I see them lose. The only thing I would like to point to, and it's more like an open question that I actually don't really have an opinion about it, but now that you have Dupree, Majisk, and Zonic, I throw you back to the creation of Vitality and how complicated it had been first.
I was going to link to this. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, that's the way I'm looking at it too. When Vitality brought in this trio from Astralis, it took them a really long time to figure out the Counter-Strike they wanted to play. And there was some obvious sort of locking horns happening in terms of, hey, this is how I think we should play, and this is what I need, and this is how you should talk, and this is what we should do. They took a little bit of while. So I do not know if it is something that Snappy is going through right now, where he has... Because it's not the same. It is a team isn't going to work the same if you have three players from an X team and then one player from a team, another player from a different team, and a coach from a different team. Now you actually have, figuratively, you sort of have a block, like you have a core of people who are together who, I guess, have updated their way of looking at Counter-Strike, but still share some characteristic on how they want to play the game. And I don't know if that's something that maybe Snappy is going to take a little bit of time to warm up to. The same way Apex needed time to actually function and be good with the Danish trio in Vitality. So is there something that is in the water for Falcons right now where Snappy isn't exactly aligned with the way his teammates want to play, the way Zonic wants to play? I wager this is something that takes a little bit of time, and I do wonder if that has a bigger impact. But again, these are purely hypotheses.
I haven't talked
with them. I don't have behind-the-scene access.
Of course.
But this, if you just ask me, what do you think is happening here? I would say that's probably a lead that could be investigated.
No, by the way, and that is exactly appropriate content for podcasts like this. That's literally what we're doing, is just waxing lyrical about the game and just throwing ideas out there, etc. Right? So what I'll do is I'll take a couple of those points that I want to actually do a bit of back and forth. Because even though we are actually both really good, because we're both analysts, just doing the thing where we talk for 10 minutes. Like, obviously, sometimes you want to let the other person get in on one. So I'll just a couple of those points. So on the last one, this is where actually great minds think alike. Just give myself credit there. Because I actually was going to use exactly that point. Because what I always try to do, if you notice, Maniac, is I try not to make it just like one factor. I try to think like, what are the other things essentially? Like, if one thing's failing at the top of a system, what are the things below it that might be failing that can't even get to that point? Well, one of them I thought about immediately is this Zonic angle. Because notice no one ever mentions that, bro. What they do is they go, oh, what the fuck? Like, they don't have a star like Nerds anymore. Or they go, what the fuck? Snappy, fragging bad and not calling. Or like, hey, what happened to the Ents call? They used to be so coherent. And what they don't ever talk about anymore is Zonic. They just act like he doesn't exist. And it's like, guys, this is Zonic's project. And that is a key way to frame this, Maniac. This wasn't like they signed the team and then they said to Zonic, hey, do you need some work? Well, do you want to be a coach of this team? No. He is the one who, in theory, picked these players and scouted these players and decided he wanted to sign these players. And him and Magus want to reunite. He even, I'm going to guess, is the one who brought back Dupree and got him back in the last. So by the way, these are massive gambles. Like that last one's a massive gamble, obviously. No one knew how that would work out. So if you consider that, I think you have to not think about this as like, it's just like Taz joining G2 and he's learning their way. It's more like Blade and Na'Vi, because what does Blade always say, but he's been proven right. And I'll just say, I think Zonic has, and we might be about to see it a third time, which is Blade will always tell you with a new lineup, oh, my teams don't win the first event with a lineup. I mean, dude, in that interview after he won the major, he even said his goal still for the major was just top four. He was still like trying to progressively get better tournament on tournament. And when normal coaches say the same thing, Maniac, they are full of shit. When they're like, hey, give me 6 months. It's like, bro, if you just have a normal team and you're just a normal coach, what you mean there is don't judge me, please. I'm not going to do well. When Blade says it, I've seen him do it, guys. I have seen him take players and just build them into his system and they just get better and better and better. And over time, they eventually become a championship team. Now, Zonic did that twice. He did that in Astralis and he did that now with Vitality. I'll quickly make a point on the Astralis one people probably missed. Dude, Device said this in his interview at Pro League. He said a very interesting thing because he was trying to explain how the new Astralis still needs time to figure out how to play together and get... He pointed out that even him, Dupree and Zipnix, which were the three that went all the way back to like 2013, even they took a while to sort of learn how each other plays. Well, that's actually probably the most underrated thing about Astralis is that they had three players by the time they became the GOAT lineup in 2018 who'd been playing together for like 5 years. So even though everyone wanted to make it like, no, it's just genius at the tactics. No, no, that tactic becomes like 30% easier when you played with the guy for 5 years and you know when Zipnix is going to make like a correct angle. You know when Device is going to play passive. You know when Dupree is going to go aggressive. When you've all played together for that long, it's like sports. It becomes almost like telepathy because you just know the guy. In your head, you have a version of him and you know what he's going to do. And that's why it works. It's not actually that you'd have the best review session ever and then Zonic was like moving pieces around like a football thing. You're going to push up the wing. Like, yeah, he was doing that like as well, but all the other coaches do that as well, guys. What happens is you have an OP advantage. You have the synergy, the chemistry, right? So one, that is the fact that people don't think about because those three, like you said, they took a while in Vitality to get cooking, guys. And it wasn't even just pieces. When they brought the pieces in, they had to integrate Sphinx. They had to figure out what Dupree's role was. And Magus, by the way, clearly took time to start cooking. And yeah, the whole thing took a while to get going. So first of all, I'm going to give Zonic time in that sense. Like, I don't think he's the guy where you just give him a lineup and they're just going to win the first lineup. I don't think that's plausible. I also think, like Blade, by the way, I don't know that they're a perfectionist, but they have that thing where they do want to implement high-level CS immediately, and that takes fucking time, mate. Like, I think what you saw with Astralis was it also took them time to wind up to that level, and it's why when they changed pieces, they were never even close to the same team. Didn't matter. Remember, some of those pieces were fucking good that came in. Like, didn't matter. You wouldn't be as good. So then after that, the other detail I would say is this angle, which is on the end score thing, that is the most underwhelming part of this team, mate. Because look, we could talk in a minute. I think I'll save it and we'll do it after about like stars and what should they do about fragging and stuff. But if you just look at like what the end score had, one of the things that I loved about that team, a la Heroic, was man, they were so fucking coherent. Like they really did play as a team. They clearly knew what Snappy wanted. They knew, again, they actually had that sort of synergy at the team. That isn't here right now, mate. If I had to say the worst quality of Falcons, it's not even just raw fragging, which everyone else is going to point to. We can get to that in a minute. It's actually poise. Like, bro, in that G2 game there, like, as you say, on that nuke game, you're going to be like, oh, but they just got destroyed. Mate, how many times, you remember the game, how many times in the early round would they get, like, a kill and be up in numbers? Or they'd get, like, remember that one where Snappy, right at the end of the game, did that mad MP9 push on the stairs? He got that insane kill, and if he then just played, like, differently, that's, like, a mega winnable round. But they fucked it up and managed to let the bomb get down, since it was a 2v2 with bad weapons. Like, that's the sort of thing that old Ensign Heroic never would do. That's where they would win the round, mate. That's when, like, team player could win you a game against better guns, better fraggers. So, right now, they are ass in the late round, mate. This team... You can just bet on this team to lose clutches, mate. They do it all day long.
And the problem with that is, just to bounce back on your point as
well. No, go for it. That's my point.
They have to have... You know, you were talking about the Astralis core and, I mean, the three players, the Device and Nick Dupree, who've played for many, many years. They know each other so well. I mean, I think Madden Senpais and Snappy should get close to that sort of state already now.
Yeah.
They have played together for a long time. They know each other for
a long
time.
It's like a year and a half or something, mate. Yeah.
Exactly. So I can imagine that. So the way I look at Counter-Strike is that when you go down to the late round, the 2v2 clutches with high intensity, I think this is where you're going to be exposed if you're not used to play with someone. Because, right, it's a moment where not everybody can just voice consciously what they're doing. There's a little bit of, no, actually not a little bit. There's a whole lot of focus that's going straight on your crosshair. There's micro decisions to be made. There's code names to be used so that you don't spam the comms. So if you tell me Snappy and Dupree don't know how to approach this 2v2 that's panicky, I would say, okay, Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's going to take time. It's probably going to take them 20 clutches to play in a 2v2 so they start understanding how each other is feeling, what are the code words, what's the intonation when they're stressed, what is it. Like, it's going to take them time, and that's fine. But a 2v2 with Snappy and Sampaio's should literally be just a normal day in the Ents office.
Yes.
That's the way I see it. There is no reason to think that they would approach this clutch differently. They've played it already 50 times. So that in itself is something that I worry a little bit about, the fact that there is a lack of coherence in these some situations where a trio already know each other. They know each other. They know how that works. So that's a little bit of an issue. And I wanted to bounce back as well on the Zonic point very quickly. The way I see it, a coach's impact is never going to be short-term. Never. The only aspect where a coach can from day one actually do something is if they have tremendous human skills and they can, on the day of an event, maybe talk someone out of a frustrated stage or maybe put someone in the right mindset in terms of confidence. On an individual level, I think you might be able to have a quick short-term impact, but it's always going to take time. It is always going to take time if you want to, like, install a system, if you want to improve and optimize training protocols, if you want to define goal for a team and have a roadmap of where you want to go. None of these things are done in a matter of weeks. The same way, I would not put failures on a coach's doorstep when they do, but I wouldn't give them credit if they won after an event either. It's a two-way street. You're not going to get my credit if you win an event after 3 weeks, but I'm not going to blame it on you if you don't. So yes, of course, it's take time. And I also think the coach leader is one of the most important symbiosis there is in Counter-Strike. And Snappy had that with Saw. There's no doubt about it. He was an Ents. He had Saw in his back. Yes. They knew each other. They perfected the system. They understood each other. Zonic is not a coach like Blade that's going to come in with just an open mind thinking, okay, so what do we do? No, he's got an idea.
Yes.
He's got an idea on how to win in Counter-Strike. He's done it a fair few times. So I do believe that the Snappy Zonic pair might take time to synchronize.
Yes.
And that's okay. That's all right. The question is, are they going to be able to withstand like the losses that are going to be on the way to that path? That's, to me, that's like the one question.
Yes. And also, I'll just throw this out there. I think that the thing people miss is that that's also the difference between being a championship coach who has won and has had like an era all at a time where your team was dominant, is you have figured out your flavor and your recipe for Counter-Strike. So the difference is, I'll use a football manager example. There are managers that just a profession, like essentially they just know their job as manager and they're going to go team to team to team depending on the results. And what they do is they have to do short-term results because they get fired after a season. What they do is it's like, right, this is the personnel I have. Here's a game plan that works for them. Let's just try and win matches today, basically. Let's win the match on Saturday. The difference is, if you're one of the legendary coaches and you're going to get many chances and you want to build another all-time great team, you're going to do the opposite. You're going to actually be sort of a teacher. You're going to say, hey, guys, you're going to learn my system. Like, maybe I have a defensive system. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I play super aggressive like Johan Cruyff did back then. Whatever happens, I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to go through play. I might even have to fire some of you who are good. Like, I'm going to get the people who fit my system, which, by the way, I think that's what Blade's done. But I also think people just miss that it's what Zonic did, because his team was just too successful, so they never saw the build-up. They just think he just walked in and everyone knew what they were doing and they just won the game. So what I would flip to now is, let's do the obvious thing though, which is, they do have an issue, which is, it's quite obvious to me, which is, if you want them to be a team, guys, that can go to semis and win events, where the fuck is their top 15 player in the world? They don't have one. Like, I know some Pius used to be, but first of all, he isn't that guy at the moment. And the AWP also, unless you're Monacy, just isn't like that right now. And then the other problem I have is this. If you don't have that player, this is where that Snappy interview slightly triggered me, where the headline was like, maybe we can do it by committee, right? One, guys, that's him admitting he knows Dupree is not 2018 Dupree. He's telling you that by that headline. Because what you say, if you believe it's 2018 Dupree, is, I now have the new nerds. It's okay, we're going to win like we did, and let's get going. When he says we can do it by committee, guys, it's because Snappy, like Carrigan's a very shrewd in-game leader. What he's admitting to you is, I know I don't have the craziest firepower, but I do have this base, and I have a bunch of experienced players, so maybe if, like, for example, some Pius has a CT side on this map, and then Dupree has a T side on the other map, and then on the third map, Madden frags a bit better than he expects. Hey, maybe we win, like, by being a team. That sounds brilliant, Minik, but here's why I hate it as a statement. It's CS2. That's CSGO you're talking about. You're right. In CSGO, I saw Heroic and Ents do it by committee sometimes. I did see there were times they could win without having the better players. In CS2, unfortunately, this is like the worst time ever to trade out like a floor raiser like Magisk for your ceiling raiser like Nerds. Like, Nerds is the guy where if he was in the team right now, he would frag all their heads off. And suddenly, half the rounds we're talking about, you have no points. You just win anyway. You know what I mean? You just win the round at that point. Because here's the thing. I'm not going to hit on Dupree. I do think the discussion here is nuanced, which is because everyone expected him to not be good because how it was like, it's not even that he was bad at the end of Vitality, guys. It's just that he was like okay in sort of like, he clearly had to give up a lot of his game. So he wasn't all Dupree. The idea is going to come back like Astral's Dupree. That's ludicrous. That's just not plausible. Now, he is actually sort of playing admirably for that level. Like, he's much better than you'd think, but he's not. Put it this way, the obvious thing to say is he's not Nerds, mate. Like, Nerds is a mega skilled player, like, right now. Like, that guy will frag your fucking head off. Dupree's more like he is the mix of experience. He's still pretty good. He has timings. He obviously has to find his place in the system. But one of my issues is if you have all these other problems, bro, this is where actually fragging could help you out, mate. It could just get you through some games. And they clearly do lack the star player for me.
Yeah, I mean, let's start with this statement. How crazy is that Dupree was the highest rated player at Pro League for Falcons?
That's crazy.
Actually, the highest rated player as someone who, I think it was clear for everybody when he, so first of all, there was Boros. And then let's pretend that he was given a chance and then that chance was taken away. And then, okay, so you're not going to have this X-Factor crazy potential. Then, yeah, in a world of dreams, having Nerds here could be completely incredible. You would have this super multi-kill factory of a rifle right there. When Dupree joins, I think most people understand that the expectations in terms of the superstar fifth are going to be, they're going to be tampered down just a little bit. Like, it's take it easy, right? In that regard, I think Dupree exceeded my expectations of what he was going to do as an individual, the space he was going to take, the impact he was going to have. He exceeded in Pro League. But the problem is that it hides a very ugly truth. If Dupree exceeds all expectations and ends up being the highest rated player, that means some other factors have gone awfully wrong. You mentioned Ents and how they were capable in CSGO in 2023 to win by committee. They also had the sixth best player in the world in Sampaius. Yep. Like, what happened? Like, where is he? What's going on? I was never ready to put Sampaius in the same basket as Monacy, Simple, Zaiwu. I was never ready to put him quite up there, but I have to admit that in 2023, he showed me many, many, many times that he was capable on stage of having star performances with 20 plus kills, huge impact. Hell, he even destroyed Vitality a couple times himself.
No, he beat FaZe in that fucking Dallas one. He had some massive games, for sure.
He had massive games. So he has earned a certain status. I think he has earned a certain status as a player, as a star player. But that also means there must be some sort of demand and expectations on what you're providing. And I think it was very, very mild what he did in Pro League. And that's an immediate issue. Honestly, both Sampaius and Majisk haven't lived up to the expectations that I had. Now, maybe I'm being delusional.
No, I know what you mean.
But the Majisk angle was supposed to be the clear upgrade. It was supposed to be a no-brainer. You were supposed to be that much better than Diha. Immediately an upgrade, incredible anchor. Yes. So did he suffer a little bit from like the, what you call that, the musical chairs of positions that they had with Boros, where they were trying to figure out, okay, this is where we're going to put Boros, and then all of a sudden Snappy's outside on Nuke, and then Majisk's inside. I don't know if he maybe lost a little bit of confidence in that process, and it's going to take him a little bit of time. But bro, Majisk in Vitality was criminally underrated. Like, he was an incredible player. He had... His rating was never stolen. He never had five Glocks that he would kill for nothing. He would always have hard-earned frags that changed the course of a game. And that's why he would have massive impact rating. That hasn't materialized either. So if we're really going to do like a sort of a post-mortem on the individuals, I think neither Sampaius nor Majisk have given us what we were hoping to see if you're looking for a higher ceiling for Falcons. And hopefully that changes for them. I do think it's going to be a win condition. These are going to be win conditions drastically.
Right, I'll two things on that. One, this is obviously another example of where we always have to put the framing of, like, we are judging CSGO against CS2, and CS2 has certain tendencies that seem a bit different. So, for example, I do think it's fair when people keep saying, like, everyone is talking like it's CSGO Nico, for example, where actually CS2 Nico hasn't really been as effective a player. I mean, I will say, I thought that Twitter thread from Peter the other day analysing G2 was quite interesting, where he actually saw that, like, the way they use Nexo as a lurker, he thinks makes it harder for the entries like Nico. So that's a pretty interesting lens to take. But at the same time, if you just watch the crosshair, Nico wasn't popping the heads like he used to. Like, the eye test for a player like that will always check out. But with that said, so I can't be certain these players will ever be the ones they were in CSGO, as weird as this sounds, this is where I take the opposite to what I think the casual fan does. Because the casual fan really does react to each individual game, and they either make the stock go crazy high or crazy low, depending on whether you win or lose the game. I do think the mistake they're making, like with the Zonic one, is thinking that you can just dismiss all these players, though, and that you should, like, get rid of them, they're not the right player. Because those two players, like, it's not like Sampaio only did it for, like, 3 months. He had, like, a really solid, like, he had the end of Movistar into, like, after the first, like, what, 3-4 months in, and then he really got cooking for most of 2023. Yeah, yeah. Like you say, he had, like, enough time where I feel like, give Zonic and Snappy time to adjust with him, give him time to work, get the rest of the team stabilized, that can start to improve. And crucially, Magus is the one I have massive faith in to come back. Like, I'm with you, by the way. The real problem is this: he's the player that used to actually make me mild when people tried to use the 2019 Zewu narrative in 2023. They'd go, he's just 1v9ing, and it's like, motherfucker, have you seen the people? First of all, I'll give you that Sphinx could be up and down. By the way, it could still be, like, the best rifle in the game in a match, like, you know. But Magus was the one you were all sleeping on if you're a fan. And I get it, by the way. Here's the reason why you were sleeping. Because what was amazing about Magus, just go watch when they win Blast Paris, is it's not that he does, like, a 4K and it's in a frag movie. He would just have T-sides where he, like, always got the kill on the rotator guy, or got, like, a fucking 2K that's, like, one of those quiet 2Ks that goes on the scoreboard, but you don't notice. It doesn't open the round, it doesn't close the round, but it wins you the round, mate. That's the one where, you know, the other guy gets a 1K there, where you've got a 2K, and suddenly, like, the round's just easier for everyone. Now it is easier for Zewu to come in and win the clutch. Now it is easier for Sphinx to just bash their heads off and win a game. So, first of all, he was criminally underrated in Vitality. Like, if you don't know, here's a cool detail people might not know. That guy Nero, who does probably the best stuff on HLTV, because he doesn't just do stats, he sort of tries to then model them into things like, how do we evaluate which players are playing which positions well, or what types of players are there? I know he's one of the people that, even though, because he's on HLTV, they are all just, like, worshippers at the fucking, like, to them, the God Emperor is that stats database. Like, whatever number it spits out is, like, the sayings of God, and they're the priest class, right? But I've almost, like, encouraged within him a heretical sentiment maniac, because obviously I've always been against the idea that the stats tell you. I think it's the other way around. You can use stats to, like, it suggest angles, but you always have to watch and see. Magus is the player that showed that there are flaws with the HLTV rating, because as you said, he'd have games that I'm talking about there that the rating would tell you, like, a 1.07, which is like, oh, that's all right. And it's like, mate, when he watched the game, he was like the sleeper carry. Do you know what I mean? Like, he did like all the fucking meat and potatoes work. And actually, some games, sometimes a Sphinx or a Zewu just got to sort of, like, eat the dessert, as it were, at the end after he'd done all the fucking work. So I do think if I tell you, he was criminally underrated. But that's why now, because they won at the end of Vitality, now they've made him so that, like, he's not the player they think he is. Like, when he walked into this team, remember, he himself was one of the players that had to adjust in Vitality. He didn't just walk in on day one and just frag everyone's head off. And then also, in this team, he looks way more lost. And he's way less, like, he just doesn't get those kills right now, mate. So he is a player I have the alarm bells going for him too, because I noticed, because we all think he's so good, and he got the rep for being underrated. Now no one wants to say that he's not doing that well. We want to focus on Snappy or Zonic or Falcons as a super team, or, like, what if they had nerds or what's a pa-? We almost never mention Magus. We give him the pass because he's so legendary. But I do think right now his performance isn't good enough. Now, I will say, that's a player where I also think he's a very smart player. I think a player like that will figure it out. He will get there eventually, but I agree. Right now, he isn't giving you, like, what you hoped you would get from Magus, because it's true. That's where that whole do-it-by-committee would have worked. If Magus really had come in, like Vitality Magus, and then they have the rest, yeah, they wouldn't have had the same ceiling, because they wouldn't have, like, the Nerds player. But the idea was they would have the better floor, wouldn't they? They'd be the team that, in theory, would be, like, always fifth to sixth or top four. Like, you wouldn't be winning, but you'd know, like, with that one piece away. Right now, they have problems all around the squad, if you notice. That's why, actually, the one thing I'll spin it to is this. If you are Snappy and you are Zonic, here's the one positive. It's a counterintuitive way of thinking. Is you can get a lot of fucking credit if you can fix this team. Yeah, because right now, it's a really flawed team. And it's easy to poke holes, and it's easy, guys.
I know. And it's, honestly, when you have to manage like a group of people like that, it people have to realize that if let's just pretend that there are 1, 2, 3, 4 different problems within a lineup, what is very complicated is to see how problem one influences problem number three, yes, which then influences problem number four. And then you're trying to fix something, and then it's like you're playing whack-a-mole, where suddenly, oh, your T-side is much better, but then hold on a second, no, now we're losing the force by it. So what the hell is going on? Okay, now our CT-side is fixed, but we're not capable of executing. It's really complicated, and this is where a really strong coach comes into play. Like, a really strong coach will help the leader have a clear view of, okay, these are the steps that we need to go through to fix this team. Like, this is how we start. Sure, it might look a little confusing right now. It might feel like there are 7 different things that are going wrong. But actually, I think the common denominator is this. And we're going to start with this problem. And then we're going to fix this one. And that's how we're going to work forward. Like, that's how you actually earn your money, if you ask me. That's when you can sort of decipher the chaos of what is apparently, because if you listen to this podcast, the last 15 minutes, we've been talking about all the issues that Falcons are having, and you might be ready to just put them in the grave and say, well, that's it. You know, it's never going to work. Snappy isn't fragging. Sampaio is not a star like in CSGO. Majisk is underwhelming. Well, I guess that's it. Bye, everybody. No. The leader and the coach have to be able to see the path forward, and they have to be able to understand what is underlying some of these issues. And then sometimes you can create a virtual cycle the same way you can create a vicious cycle. Like, you can fix one issue, and then suddenly you have one player that's feeling a bit more comfortable. He brings more stability to a setup, and then suddenly other people can do what they have to do. It's the same where you would think if your shoulder is hurting, you should never do anything anymore at the gym with the shoulder. But actually, no, maybe not. Maybe it's you need to strengthen sometimes. Your back.
Yes.
Maybe just strengthen your back, you know, and that's what it also, yes, you do. Your lower back is stronger, then suddenly your shoulder doesn't have to, yes, overcompensate. It's not hurting anymore. Yes. I have a very systematical way of Counter-Strike. I, yes, see it like that. One player sucking isn't always just one player sucks and he has to leave. There might be other issues at hand, and if you tackle them, you can fix them. And yeah, I think they've earned our trust for at least a little longer, some of the profiles that we mentioned.
No, I actually love the way you do that analogy as well, because that is the perfect way to say it. It's like, yeah, the concept, if people don't know, is famously a lot of injuries on like a muscle or a joint. So it's because it was actually already overcompensating for, like, you had a week, like you say, a week back, or you. I mean, the famous one, if people don't know, is a lot of fat people have really bad problems with their knees because there's too much weight on the fucking that area. And if they literally just lost some weight, amazingly, they won't have the same pain and they'll be able to rehab it, etc. It's just they're in a problem where they can't do that. In fact, if people don't know, I can say this because he did lose the weight. That's actually what happened to Anders years ago. He had the nightmare scenario where he was traveling all the time for events. And back then, people didn't used to be disciplined to do the gym. They would just eat burgers and stuff when they went to events because everyone was working all the time, right? And if you remember, he injured his knee and he was told by the doctors, basically, right, what you need to do is lose some weight so we can do the operation on the knee. But then what happened was, because his knee hurt and he was at events all the time, and he could never get out of this vicious cycle. He was always in the spot where it's like he could never get the knee fixed because he couldn't do the things he had to do before. I agree with you. It's like that in some of these teams. That's why, unlike other teams, I'm not being ruthless like you and saying, let's cut them all, because this is where, guys, can everyone please pick a lane? Because, you know, normally people hate when I say stuff like, I'd just remove Hooksy at this point in time and go to a new... They're like, no, give him time. It's like, guys, if you're going to be the people who believe give teams time, you're telling us to cut the whole fucking Falcons team pretty much. Like, you want everyone fired. Like, instead, what we're telling you is, like, look, they're way away now, but unlike a lot of squads that are, like, inexperienced or you've never seen them do it, it's plausible to believe these things can be fixed. And I'll use your analogy. You don't even need to fix them all, Maniac. If you just fix like one or two, especially the most important ones, the other ones might fix themselves. Like, you know what? Yeah. Maybe there's a world where, I'd have to watch his POV to know this, maybe there's a world where the reason why Sampaio isn't as dynamic anymore is he, like, for, this is a classic thing AWPers often have, maybe he just doesn't feel like he has comfort with whoever's watching his back or who's watching another angle or who's throwing a flash for him. You know, these are things that are no minor thing. It's not like just because you're the AWPer, you're in a DM all the time. Like, sometimes people need comfort. Like, I mean, back in the day, I'll give you an old school example because it won't hurt anyone's feelings there, and like some pro players now, the legendary NA AWPer Frod was an amazing player at 1.6, if people don't know him. He was actually one of the best players of all time, and he was a mega dominant big game player. But I can tell you, I've known all his teammates. He was a guy who didn't just play like it was a DM, mate. He wanted comfort. Like, as in, when he takes that angle where he's going to win the AWP duel, you better be watching his flag. If he ever gets fucking killed by that guy pushing on some cheeky like JW push, he is going to go mental, and it will mean he'll second guess his peak next time, because now he'll be thinking, oh, do I have to pull off, do I have to back off, and what timing do I, and it'll throw his whole game off. So things like that, for all we know, that could literally make this team like competitive tomorrow, because they're still not that far off. They're not that far off as a team. Right?
No, and it takes time. Go ahead, move on.
You can pick which next one, because the other two teams to talk about, in my opinion, it's got to be VP or Astralis, right? So which one do you want to do? Go on.
I'm going to do VP first.
Go on.
I'm going to do VP first. And so there's one angle that I'm looking at and I'm thinking about a lot, is I see the way Norbert has been playing in this Pro League right now. And I do worry that one of the underrated aspect of Mir being obviously underwhelming and probably not taking the responsibility he needed was that by consequence, Norbert was probably getting to dictate quite a lot of what was happening in his positions. And then if you ask me, with the previous roster, Norbert in a power ranking of anchors was probably in a top five conversation,
yeah.
if not higher.
For sure.
He was really up there. So now I do wonder for him individually if Electronic coming in, and Electronic is not a silent guy. Right? Electronic has ideas on how he wants to play the game. And he basically, whenever he gives you communication live in-game, he makes you feel that if you don't, he is about to murder you. Like, you better give him the flash when he needs to. He has an incredible authority.
Sure.
Like, the gravitas and the authority of Electronic when he is playing, it is absolutely mental. I don't even know if I could ever play with someone like that. I'm sure some people have, you know, the Navis of old. They were winning, and that was fine with them. But he has an incredible gravitas. And I'm going to have to look back and very specifically look at the way Norbert was playing in his game and why he hasn't exactly been performing the way he was with the previous roster. But I do wonder if that's not like a hidden problematic that they're going to have. That something that we and I personally have taken as a given, as a, like the premise is Norbert is going to be really strong as an anchor. And if that wasn't also sort of a consequence, a byproduct of having Mir, and now that Electronic is here, Norbert's going to take a while to adapt. That, to me, that's like the one thing that really shocked me when I watched VP play. The whole Jame and Electronic is going to take time to figure out how they want to play Counter-Strike, that's okay for me. It's not cause for alarm. I'm not alarmed now. Absolutely not. But that immediate drop in Norbert's performance, that worries me a little bit, and I wonder where it's going to go in the next few weeks and months.
Okay, I love this because actually the VP one's another one that has so much you can go into. There's so much nuance and it's so fresh. But as usual, people are just doing like really simplistic narratives. Like either when they signed Electronic, you were like, holy fuck, this is like going to be the best team in the world. Because look, if you look at the names on paper, it should be like Team Spirit. Maybe you can just win the first event. Fuck it, maybe you can just be number one. Like, I mean, you've got all these amazing names on paper. Like, you know, the hypothetical's crazy. But then when people see them play in Pro League, they're like, nah, fucking, it's over. Like, but, and then obviously, the weird thing is, this is why the Norbert one's a really disturbing angle. When they signed Electronic, look, if you ever go and read the interview with the guy who's the CEO, when he said that they have unlimited, you know, sort of like ambitions on the transfer market, they did actually put look, and it did actually suggest he meant in the future, though. He meant like this line, like going to give this lineup a chance. He didn't mean like we're going to replace Norbert tomorrow. What people took that from was in the report saying they were bringing in Electronic, it said they considered either Mir or Norbert, I think was what they said in that report initially. So that part is a mild concern because, look, anytime you hear that even publicly it's hinted like maybe we're going to cut this guy and then his performance drops off a cliff, you've been in enough teams, mate. Like, that's just, you've just destroy the guy's morale. You're making him think, literally. And whereas before, it was like, hey, I'm just Norbert. Wow, I'm like overperforming. This is dope. Like, I actually don't have expectations. Now it's like, if I do bad, they're going to replace me. And they've just said they have unlimited money. Like that's scary. Like, that's the sort of thing you don't want to put on the guy who's, like, overperforming, you know. So there's that angle. But also, the other problem I have with this is it's why I've always said this when they made this lineup change. I put a lot of my focus onto Jame in this lineup. Because the problem I've always had is I think Jame had the craziest narrative glow-up I've ever seen from winning a major of an in-game leader, mate. Because before that, half the scene, 80% of the scene hated this guy as an IGL. They were like, I hate his style of play. It doesn't look good. It ruins games. Remember, you called it anti-Counter-Strike. Mm-hmm. And even worse, until the major, you don't win big events. All you do, famously, I used to say it this way, all Jame would do is it's like, right, if you're one of the top five teams, like put the names in a hat, pick a name out, unlucky. You're just going to lose to VP in a three map, you know, 16-14 map game. Your tournament's ruined. But don't worry, VP's not going to go and win the tournament either. Like, they're just, all they've done is ruin your tournament. And the worst thing is when you're like a Vitality or someone, or G2, they're then going to go in the next round and lose to a worse team. You know, like lose to some other fucker that you could have beaten. And that's why if you're the pro player, you mild because you're like, this motherfucker. But here's the problem. Because he won that major, and there's a reason, Maniac, in one of my new Substack articles that's for the paid people, I cite Outsiders winning as one of the fluke major wins, in my opinion. It's because if you ever look at their numbers, not only were James' numbers way higher than they ever are, but at that tournament, all three big names in that team, the big stars at the time, all fragged out. Him, Flit, and Fame all went mental, mate. They all had a glow up all at the same time. So my problem is this. I think James' style historically, I will say they changed it a little bit. They're certainly not as passive as they used to be. But my problem is his calling style. People used to think it was just because he didn't have any talent. Remember, back in the Vanguard, it was basically James. He was the main guy. Then they had, like, what, a bit of Kicker and Buster? And remember, Adren and Sanji were kind of like, they made Sanji a fucking meme, like a bot for giving orbs. And then Adren was just washed. Like, at the time, you think, well, I can see the flaws of the team because you just don't have a good lineup. Then they got Yekinda. They got a bit more power, right? But even still, the thing that always scared me, and even into Outsiders VP, was they never had a deep map pool. They could win using that bullshit style, but they never had, like, four maps who were really strong on. That's why I knew they were never going to be an elite team. Like, by the way, I called this team the second they won the major. Like, sick win. I even belted them a whole bunch of times, but you're not going to do it again. Like, that can't happen again. So what I'm worried about is this, is Jim isn't fucking Blade or Zonic, mate. I don't know that he has this system that, like, wins you the major and gets you a top team. So I actually worry that in his system, this is just a real flaw with something about how he calls or thinks about the game. Because when you watch this team, I'm really worried they're going to have the same problems the other ones had, which go, there's twofold. One, they never in any version of VP, you can go look, had that map pool I'm talking about. They always had this weird thing where they'd sort of be good. I always used to say they're good on 2.5 maps. And 2.5, by the way, will never win your tournaments, like, unless you have that miracle glow up. And by the way, the other reason I think Outsiders winning was a fluke is the only good team they had to play was Heroic in the final. Everyone else, they got the craziest draw ever. All the favourites went out to nobodies, like fucking FaZe, who's the Bad News Eagles. Vitality just bombing out, Ents just shit them. You know what I mean? Like, they just cruised through that. So the problem I have is this, it's twofold. One, now that you have the players, that map pool has to get really good now. Because I actually do think when fans criticise, like, lower teams for having a bad map pool, it's like, bro, if you don't have the stars, how can you do it? You can work on the map all day long. But, like, there are certain maps where, like, key positions have to frag. Certain CT roles have to hold the site. If you can't do that, you'll never win that map. And then the other angle is this, and this is actually a very nuanced one that I don't think anyone else is looking at, is I made this point before jokingly, but I mean it seriously. When you add in Electronic, my fear as well is this about the James system is, does it actually work with a lot of fragging? Because it doesn't look like a super open system where people do what they want, right? I think that's actually why people like May struggled. So the problem is we've had this story before. It's like Cloud9 when they added players and we all kept saying they're almost there, they're almost there. And then they never were there. They were just edging us the whole time. In VP, they've added more skill a load of times, guys. They added Yekinda. It didn't make them go to four maps amazing. They added fucking Flit. It made them a bit better, but it didn't put them over the top. They added Chiron. Dude, everyone forgets that. When they cut Norbert and added Chiron, we all thought, bro, the firepower now. Imagine if... And Chiron was gone within a few months. They brought fucking Norbert back. So now they've added this guy. Well, I'll tell you the first person that's already struggled for Electronic coming. Fame isn't a fucking top player now. He's just dropped off a cliff. So I wonder in this team, this isn't FaZe Clan, mate. You're not just going to have people pop off all the time. Like, this, they've got the players. I'll give you that. The players look sick on paper, but you know this, like the difference between on paper and in the server can be a world of difference, right?
I know. I just bounce back quickly on the Fame point.
No, do it all, mate.
Unfortunately, I think it's been a long time coming now. And I think that the adjustments that Fame had to go through in order to accommodate Mir really, really weighed him down. Like, it really weighed him down.
Right.
Fame is a player that had to suddenly become like the secondary anchors in positions, whereas it's pretty clear. And there is a little bit of the Wakadia profile narrative to it too. He's a player that is comfortable when he gets to fight, like when he gets to run, when he gets to be in your face. This is where Fame is going to shine. His standing around, patience, CT style is still something he has to work on. And unfortunately, I think he paid a heavy price when Mir was accommodated. And I hope it's going to get better now with Electronic. Not that he gets better positions, but hopefully he finds himself in better situations. So Fame, unfortunately, hasn't been the Fame that won Rio in a long time. Like, it's just a fade image from that. Now, to talk about just the play style of Jame and how VP have added skill time and time again and hasn't worked out, I think the difference is when you bring in Electronic, you have to consider what he can bring to the table in terms of philosophy of Counter-Strike. It would be the silliest thing to pick up Electronic and to just use him as a skill upgrade of Mir. I think you would be missing out on like his approach of the game. And I don't really think that it is drastically different for VP in the sense that people are forgetting that Na'Vi used to be gods of late round. And by late round, yes. I mean sub 20 seconds, like sub 25 seconds. They would be the absolute gods of like attacking the A side of Mirage with 26 seconds left from Abs and Ramp and still winning the round anyway. So they were extremely good at it. But I do think that the Na'Vi system had way more sort of contextual individual plays around the map, and then that would put them in a position where they can then close around in a 5v4 and a 4v3. And this is something that I think Electronic has to bring to VP. Like the VP right now is still too gimmicky. Like they are very niche playstyle that sometimes work, and obviously they're extremely good at managing the money, and in some of the passive gambles that they have, they will suddenly pull a rabbit out of the hat and win a round that is impossible. Cool. Yeah, I get that. I acknowledge that. But they are still flaws in the way they play the game. If you compare to a FaZe, if you compare to a Vitality, if you compare to G2 to an extent, I really hope that Electronic can help with that. And again, it's not going to be a today to tomorrow type situation. I think it has to be like an open conversation that's going to take place over weeks. But surely, if you are Jame, you cannot imagine that Electronic is going to put on the VP jersey and just execute everything you say and never come in with a feedback or an idea. I think this would be a tremendous missed opportunity to not use Electronic and his ideas about the game and his philosophy about the game. And I don't imagine that it could have... I mean, just on paper, sure, they could have popped off at Pro League. And they can still pop off. They are not... As we are recording this podcast, they're about to play today to be in the playoffs. So maybe when this comes out, they've actually won their game and they're actually in the playoffs and sure. The conversation continues. The first signs haven't been as exciting as we made it out or wanted them to be. But it's way too early for me to lose faith. All I want is just for Electronic to have a say in what is being done in VP and not just be like a mindless drone that obviously will shoot harder than Mir. But if they approach it like this, I think it would be a shame.
Okay. I think that's a pretty good VP discussion. We've got a lot of new ones out of that. Let's do Astralis as the last one, because I think Astralis is a fun one, because obviously nobody had these expectations that they would be this good immediately. I mean, I'm pointing this out to people on other shows, but I feel like it goes missed. When we talk about that insane flaw of FaZe where they make all these finals, right? Guys, they've now won two LAN series against FaZe in their first two events. Like, teams don't do that unless they're like Vitality, by the way. Like, that just doesn't happen. So already, that combined with like some of the numbers, yeah, it is incredibly exciting. But this is where I think we can have a fun discussion on this, because obviously right now, the stock's just going up, right? But if you're an analyst, there are still some holes you can poke. Like, the first one is an obvious one to me, which is mate. Right, I said on a past episode, the reason I was skeptical device should be the IGL is because you won't be able to do device numbers and be the IGL. Now, look, so far he's doing it. And you know what? Actually, he's the one player I'll maybe give credit. If anyone was going to redefine Counter-Strike, I think he already did it as an AWPer, by the way, in CSGO. Maybe he can do it as an IGL. Maybe he can be like a better version of KD and be a good IGL and frag, but even better fragger, right? The difference is the whole team is so over fragging right now that like... Guys, they really will have to be the best team in the world if they're this good. Like, that seems like it cannot hold to me. Like, some of those players, that's honeymoon shit right there. You know the honeymoon period. Like, it exists. And when you go and look, here's another angle that I think people are really missing. Is because they've, played 1.5 events, they haven't even played enough series yet, Maniac, to play six maps. So at the moment, right, they permit Anubis, but they've never played Mirage. Well, immediately, here's an analyst angle, and spoiler, I'll definitely be using this for betting. I'm just going to go and look up, when I see them in future tournaments, teams that will punish pick Mirage into them, because, man, that's immediately where I'm going to see them tested a bit more. Like, yeah, they've rinsed it on the whole map pool at the moment, but they've only played five maps. Anytime you've only played five maps, it's why... Carrigan did do that genius veto against fucking Spirit on Vertigo, because we all knew that was one of the only maps that they keep in that they don't like. Now, I will say, the joke there is, his veto still wouldn't have worked if Spirit hadn't stupidly then called the bluff, which is like, to use a poker analogy, you called a bluff when you didn't have a great hand either. Like, why, you know, you didn't actually know you had the winning hand there, guys. You should have just said, well played, Carrigan, but now we just default into, I think it was like H or something, whatever it was. You were sitting as default to that, you would have won right. The series. So already, I get a little bit nervous, because we're already making it like they're going to win all these series forevermore. So there are some factors I expect to normalize and come down a bit. But I'll tell you what, I want some of your thoughts on the problems, but we can also in a minute wax lyrical. There are some fucking really cool aspects about this team that I was like, I wanted to be a hater and be like, the Astralis Orgs fucked it up. What did they do with Blame F? He was guaranteed frags. Device, you probably ruined your career. Who the fuck is Bro? I was ready for all these angles, but mate, if you're actually good, I've got to give it up. There's actually a lot of very positive. I'm actually a fan of this team now. I actually like watching them play. So what do you think about some of the holes I'm trying to poke in? What, do you have any questions about Astralis?
Oh, okay. So you want me to attack the negatives or the doubts, the zones of doubts? I can do that definitely. I think number one on the list is Device's performance in the games where like +1% or -1% make a whole difference and you win or lose. And I think as a leader, it is sometimes some things that can be exponential, and like a small little crack is going to become a gigantic problem in a grand final, a semi-final, a map number three. And I feel like the map, I'm trying to find it, that Inferno against FaZe, which is the game in Chengdu that they lose 2-1.
The bug one, yes.
Yeah, that in itself, I mean, obviously the bug is a tragedy that it happens to Device, but I feel like it blindsided people to the fact that Device was already having a pretty quiet game. And I don't want this to happen, but I think it is the proof of concept that one of the trade-offs that they're going to have is that in moments where the stakes are the highest and the decisions are the hardest to make and people are a bit more tense, it's less loose, the players aren't having as much liberty and freedom and fun, then it's the IGL who picks up the slack. It's the IGL that's got to do that. When people are getting a little bit more tense and less ideas are flowing on TeamSpeak, the IGL has to be doing that. And unfortunately, I think that it might be a problem. And for now, it's just an idea that I'm going to have to verify with numbers and games in the future. But I have a feeling that we're going to start seeing a pattern where Device's performance gets the most impacted the higher up you go in the tournament and the more intense and close the game becomes. Because this is where the IGL, this is where sometimes we praise Kerrigan so much for maybe not having the craziest stats, but then suddenly we all remember some of the calls he made at fucking 22-23 in CSGO, and it was like overtime number four, and he still comes out with an incredible call. I think this is where his performance, that is Device, will pay the price eventually. Now, that hasn't happened quite yet, just that series against FaZe. Other than that, he's been bashing everybody, and I'm so happy, and it's great to see. But that is one area where I do wonder. And then the other one, on the Stone Yabby conversation, I strongly suspected that Stone would be immediately better with the departure of Blame F. I strongly suspected that.
Like, it's the most obvious role overlap, right?
Exactly. And he would then get to probably also have more space, not just the roles that he's having, but probably have more space and say in what's happening, because of course Blame F is going to take space. That is very logical. It's very obvious. But Stone was going to benefit immensely from suddenly this sort of oxygen that he's getting, the roles that he want to have. So that his performance now in Astralis is great to see. It was relatively predictable for me. What I didn't see is the Yabby immediate phoenix rising from the ashes, one of the most disappointing player in the Astralis jersey when he joined, and now suddenly he's shooting headshots everywhere. Like, he's got 1 point, I think on LAN, ever since this roster came together, I had the page open, he's got 1.25 rating, and that's on 14 maps. That's 14 maps. Yeah. That's not just like three games. Like, on 14 maps.
He's and by the way, they're playing like FaZe in about half of those games. Yeah, exactly. sure.
So that, like, he showed so much fragility when he was in the Blame F system that I started worrying. I thought, is he going to break? Like, is this like a breaking point for Yabby with all the hype and the expectations we had on him? And now suddenly he's just fucking destroying. So this is still an area where I'm being cautious, maybe overly cautious. And I'm thinking, okay, is that something that's going to long last? Is that something that's going to be consistent? Can I rely on Yabby being that good? Because I personally fully buy into the Stair being a good player. I've never doubted. I've always
been good even in the last lineup, yeah.
Exactly. The eye test, for me, the eye test was clear, very much like Majisk in the sense of, yeah, maybe he's not going to have like a 4K that ends up on every highlight videos. But if you actually pay attention to what he's doing, he's very usually or very often doing more than what he's supposed to in any given situation. He's getting two instead of one. He's getting one instead of zero. That's, to me, like the mark of an extremely good player who, by the way, changed positions so many times in the system and he's still strong. So I believe in Steyr. I believe in Storm. I believe in Device up until the point where maybe he gets really stressed as a leader. Bro, honestly, I thought was a clever signing because in Monte, he was doing pretty great and nobody was giving him any good ball. No. Like, he was, like, he had nothing. He had nothing. He was given nothing to play with. He was kicking rocks in, like, the shittiest positions there is in Counter-Strike, and he was still good. And he keeps on delivering. But, yeah, Device and Yabby. Like, these are, like, Device in late playoff situations and Yabby overall, these are my two question marks that I wonder if, or rather, what the future looks like for that.
Here's the area where fans use interviews in a way that I think is stupid. They use interviews like it's a court testimony and the guy has to tell the truth. And so whatever someone says in an interview, you probably get this all the time. Like, we'll make like a speculation, some read, or maybe we even heard behind the scenes something. But then because in the interview, the coach or the IGL just like maybe lies or suggests something otherwise. Fans are like, no, you have to, you are wrong. In an interview, he said that's not what's that. Like the famous example, by the way, is Taz going, it was my veto at the major. I've heard from behind the scenes it wasn't his. He just did that to tank the aggro. So a fan's going to think I'm like, you're lying. It's like, I'm not. I just happen to know things that he won't say, right? But the one area as an analyst you can use interviews is it's really interesting as a peek into the psychology of in-game leaders and coaches. And so just like I said that thing about Device earlier that gave me sort of an idea about Zonic, Device himself early on made a comment in an interview, which I think is very telling for why Staun is way better. Because as you said, because Blame F was the in-game leader in the previous team. Remember, guys, Device wasn't. We're not just changing a one-for-one here. Device now becomes the IGL, right? Device immediately in an interview said that something like that they wanted Staun to be like more of a voice in a secondary caller, right? Now that is very interesting because if you're a player who's a Blame F-esque player, you're in that sort of a lurk spot, right? You know this, the lurker in an ideal world often is the secondary caller because he's on a different part of the map. He's playing on different timings. By the way, he also needs to coordinate what he's going to do with the lurk with when the entry pack goes in, for example, or what the AWP is doing. Like, if the reason why back in the day, if people don't know, I always thought the happy style was a bit inappropriate and based on too much fragging when he went to his extreme is because now you've got the IGL away from everyone. And instead of a secondary call, you're making the primary call, right? I think Staun's problem before is Blame F was the IGL, had a bunch of his roles. And so Staun not only didn't have his spots, but he didn't have agency. Like he couldn't call anything for himself. Now he actually has a way of basically sort of updating the rest of his team and Device, crucially, on what he's doing. And so I think already you see it's way better. Now, look, we're not at that point yet, so we won't worry. But obviously the one angle you worry about, like Chengdu, is put him on a stage, have all the lights in his face, and then say, Staun, time to be that top 20 player. That's where he historically has had his problems. But that's by the by, because right now in group stages, he is cooking, and they are cooking. The Yabby one's also very interesting, mate, because when he first joined Heroic, people are forgetting like the order of the narratives. He didn't join Heroic as a big-name player. Remember, everyone kept saying, that's just a side grid to refresh. That's what we all said, because he wasn't some like superstar in Copenhagen Flames, guys. He was like an all right player. But suddenly he just leveled up immediately in Heroic. By the way, a tactical team with a system, they fit him in, give him some edge. And if you remember, the things he was mega at is now what he's mega at in Astralis. He was really good on T side as like an entry player, could break a site open because he has that crispy like insta headshot aim. And then famously, what made him dope was winning all those clutches. He's doing literally both things right now, guys. This is why I have to give mad props to Device. And you know what? I'll just shade it in X, to be fair. I did it to Zonic earlier. Rogger's joined as well. Rogger's not some fucking nobody off the street, guys. He's been in loads of teams. He just often worked with lesser talents. So if you look, Device and Rogger have done a great job because they got their two biggest signings, Staun and Yabby, that everyone's laughing at. Ha ha, cut them after you spent like $2 million. And they've instantly got them back to everything you'd want from them. And Yabby, if you go look up the stats, one, he is winning clutches for fun against FaZe all day long. That's what you needed. That was the dynamic element he brought to Heroic that made them a championship team. And then just go to the classic one every analyst loves. Go to this lineup. Go to opening kills, T-side. Here's the stat. So they played 14 maps. He attempts 25.4 opening attempts and wins 52.9% of them. Right? That is immediate. Now you can see, by the way, that combined with device is why their T-side is fucking bonkers right now. And they are for real slapping like good teams. Now, the obvious question is, let's see them in the playoffs. But like I said, mate, this isn't just like people just popping off. Like, there is a system here. Like, I have to say, I've got it. I didn't know if device could make the transition from like smartest star player to like IGL. Look, it's early days, but it's looking fucking promising. I never had this on my docket. I was sort of ready to tell him, bro, you already had your lane. You were the best sniper and up. Why are you doing this? So I agree with you. It's, you can't expect him to post the numbers he has now. I mean, maybe at all, but definitely not in like finals of big lands. That's just not plausible. But there's a reason to enjoy watching this team. I find this team fun to watch again. I can put all that narrative baggage away and just enjoy what they do in the server. It's a fucking good team, mates. In fact, it's a very good team.